Welcome. This is Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. I'm Catherine Davis, and we played for you a bit of music, Frog Dancing by David Anthony Clark, Come to the River by Diane Reeves, and earlier on we played Get Together by Liz Wright. I may play more of that in a bit, but I wanted to say hello and just enter into that atmosphere of welcoming. I'm happy to be here with you in the moment and be able to engage with you in some contemplation about what's going on in our lives, in our world, and how we can come together to be supportive, as well as to understand what strains of energy are flowing through our experiences that can be in some ways managed, in other ways solved, and in some ways completely transformed. So I'm beginning to take the attitude that I have a great deal more control, or perhaps the proper word would be impact, on how my life surrounds me and how I integrate myself into the living experience. And part of that contemplation is to begin to take personal responsibility for everything with regard to my life experience, my interactions, my relationships, my work, my play, everything that I engage with comes in many ways very naturally. It just flows. And experiences come, you meet people, you have opportunities, some of them work, some of them don't. You create things in your life, you experience joyful things like dancing and listening to music or reading a good book. And we experience things that seem quite awful, losing a loved one, being sick ourselves, and or being in an experience with a person that is not healthy. All of these things get jumbled up in our life experience. And I'm beginning to understand that how much there is an interplay between how we experience the inner life and how that inner experience is reflected in our outer life, and vice versa. It works both ways. But the only way to really begin to navigate it, at least the only way that I have found that actually works for me, is to take responsibility for everything. I'm not suggesting in any manner that we are responsible in the more classically known sense, responsible for what might have occurred in our life, what our parents might have done, what our grandparents, and on throughout our genetic history. We can't fully say that I had anything to do with that, but there's a level of responsibility that I inherit from that. It's how I'm looking at it. And when I look at what's going on in the world, I'm not responsible. I'm not the cause of what a particular president chooses to do, or of what a particular conglomerate of people could choose to do, or however things occur in the world that creates conflict and war and distrust. A lot of that stuff, I didn't have anything to do with it. Personally, I mean, I didn't have anything to do with it. But there's a way in which I can interact with it in a manner that allows me to take personal responsibility with regard to how I react to those things. So maybe it is I want to research and speak the truth over an issue. Or maybe it is that I want to bring those ideas inward as a way of understanding how certain things are being interacted with in the world, and maybe take responsibility not to behave in those certain ways. So, for instance, if you have a conflict between two countries and one country is not listening to the other country, that's ultimately going to lead to conflict. So in my own life, I can, even if I disagree with a person or am not happy with a certain behavior, I can still take the responsibility of listening and comprehending and coming to a greater understanding of what are the situation at play. What is my conception, perhaps, I can have some insight into the other person's conception. I can look into myself to see, well, what is it about this person that is triggering something in me to have a response that is out of my character for, you know, getting angry or getting frustrated or getting more than I would normally. So then I would want to look within myself to see, well, what are these triggers? What is really happening for me in this moment? So let's say you're in a situation with a person, they hired you to do something and you're working on whatever that task is, and that you're not able to do it up to what the expectations are. So the idea would be to go back into yourself and say, well, was I cognizant of someone having had these expectations? What were my expectations? How is this judgment of my activity making me feel? Am I feeling put upon? Am I feeling abused? Am I feeling unappreciated? And then you can dig down deeper into that feeling and think of, well, why would somebody's expectations, whether they're real or unreal, make me feel a certain kind of way? And then you can look at, well, maybe this way that I'm feeling is much bigger than this person, and it's in relative to some other capacity or lack of a capacity in my own navigation of my life, my world, my inner self. And so that when I encounter what seems like an obstacle, or what seems like a judgment, or what seems like some manner of communicating to me that I am inadequate, coming from outside of myself, I begin to reflect within myself of what is at a very deep level already existing that makes me feel somehow incapable or inadequate, or what are the stressors that this particular situation is putting on my experience that reminds me of a stressor that might have occurred earlier on in life, or particular personality trait, or, you know, particular fault. When I'm saying taking personal responsibility, it's to begin to build a full picture of what's going on in any particular experience or engagement or success or failure or whatever is going on in our world, that they're really signals to a deeper understanding of self, so that if that person presents themselves as an obstacle or an enemy or something that could be identified as such, rather than engaging with that person as an obstacle or an enemy, I take that information in and try to process it in a way that gives me a deeper understanding, so that I can reapproach that situation from perhaps a more expansive, mature perspective, so that I can engage in a way that is potentially constructive instead of potentially destructive. We never know how people are going to react to things, but when I say take personal responsibility, I'm talking about really coming to a fullness in the understanding of what we're bringing into our life with us. How does our history, and how does our whatever training we might have had or conditioning we might have had growing up, and in terms of our hopes and aspirations, how do they play in? So there's so much flowing into the stream of life that I find it very difficult to point the finger at any one thing or any one situation without first resolving it within myself. And then once that's done, what I have discovered is that very often the energy of engagement changes. And this happens because we see each other with so much more than our eyes. We have our own human GPS system where we can feel a person's energy. We know if a person is in a happy mood, if they're depressed. We can see if a person is repressed. We can see if a person is exuberant. We can see if a person is suspicious. And it's not so much the words, though that helps, but it's often the person's posture, their countenance, the way they speak, their tone of voice, how their eyes work. Are they direct? Do they look away? Are they darting around? So we take in all this information as we're communicating with a person and with an environment, that we're just taking a lot of information in. And so that we can, if we take the time to recognize that that's happening, we can process that information, and that can allow us to understand whom we're dealing with. And equally, other people are doing that with us. So if I come to a situation feeling insecure, it might be something very deep connected to the past, not even paying attention to it. The other person is, if they're perceptive, reasonably perceptive, are going to read that. Well, this person is insecure, so what does that reader say? One possibility is they're going to try to take advantage. Well, I can suppress this person. I can get them under my control. Another person that you might be approaching with that insecurity might be, oh, wow, this person needs to be built up. Let me encourage them and help them to build their confidence. So you don't know what you're going to experience in the encounter, but we have to understand that people are reading us, and much of the engagement is that undercurrent. And so if you're meeting a situation with a certain undercurrent and you run into an obstacle of some kind, be it a person or a situation, we can react to it in such a way that is more like a kid reacts, like a hurt child is going to do something more reactive. You know, maybe blame the person, maybe attack the person, maybe, you know, just do something that could be a destructive act. So, and then that destructive act or that reactive response will further trigger the other person, and it goes on and on into full-blown conflict. So what I'm looking at when I say take personal responsibility is not that you won't have that initial response, whatever it might be. Whether or not you blurt it out or you keep it to yourself, you're still going to experience something. So what do we do with that something? We have to process it. We might find that, well, this experience makes me feel even less secure, more afraid. Or you could process it and say, this is not reasonable that I should feel afraid with this person or insecure with this person. So whatever I'm feeling, this person is just a trigger, and I need to deal with the core belief system that is causing me to get into that pseudo conflict in the first place. So it's a long way of saying taking personal responsibility is not about blame, either of the other person or of oneself. Taking personal responsibility is saying, I'm going to take the reins of this process. I'm going to get behind the driving seat. I'm going to get behind the driving wheel. And I'm either going to drive around it, I'm going to park and figure it out what the situation is, what the dangers are, whatever it might be, taking responsibility is moving into that space where you are the decision maker. You're the one who is processing this information and ultimately responsible for the outcome for you. You may not be able to change another person's outcome, but you can most definitely move through the world in such a way that you are taking responsibility for your actions, for your words, and for your outcomes. And you can choose what you can tolerate and what you can't tolerate. You can choose what is according to your ethics and sense of fairness and what is not. And we don't have to make compromises in such a way that we internally become diminished in our self-respect or in our self-understanding. So, and if we're doing that, if we're taking that personal responsibility and we say, you know what, you may be the person who's employing me, and it may be that you have certain ideas of how people should be dealt with, that doesn't mean that I have to make that compromise and deal with people in such a way that I find to be untenable. Now, in taking that responsibility and saying, you know what, I'm not going to do this. I feel it's wrong. I'm not going to do this. Say something occurs. That means if you're going to take that responsibility and say and define your own values and actions, there will be consequences. So the person that you're dealing with may want to not deal with you. The person you're dealing with may want to be argumentative, and there may be, you know, all kinds of conflict in your life. So you might either end up being asked to leave the situation or choosing to leave the situation. So that's a consequence we must accept from taking personal responsibility for who we are going to be in our walk of life. And as we learn to be more self-responsible in these regards, the world may shrink a bit in terms of who we're dealing with. The world may shrink a bit in terms of perceived opportunities. But like in the Chinese character, you know, struggle, strife, conflict, the other side of that is opportunities. And as we pull back from those narratives and stories and projections and begin to consolidate within, to craft who we are in this life stream. And then what happens is that as the peripheral stuff starts to fall away, we become more in contact with our original life stream, more in contact with the original blueprint, the original intent of why we might have chosen to be in this life, in this particular life. I'm not saying we did. I believe we did, but I'm not saying that that's the case. But, you come out of the womb, you open your eyes, and you see all this stuff going on. You're in it now. But we come with a certain amount of resources. We come with a certain amount of talents. We come with a certain amount of potential. And what happens is as we let go of the periphery of what the world wants to project upon us or direct us to behave in a certain way, the more that falls away, the closer we become to that innocent original self that came into the world with so much potential. And that potential is full blown. It's not like the potential is infant size. The potential is something that's coming directly through the life stream that, when we pay attention to it, helps to coalesce the energies around us in support of that potential coming to fruition. And so we bring ourselves closer into that part of ourself that I represent, or I think of as the shamanic self. So our potentials reflect back into the life expression that we were before being born, which could be whatever the cells were that came together, if you're purely into the physical realm, whatever you're inheriting from two sets of ancestors, whatever that potential is, whatever you're inheriting from the form of the universe, the earth, the cosmos, whatever knowledge is held there, and all the animals and the plants and the people. And for those who believe and have that connection to deeper soul spirit realm, there's all that potential. So all of that potential is flowing into our life stream as we are born. And because we live in a society where that isn't honored or respected, we get diverted very early on into becoming whatever structure is in place for us. So we grow up as little pliable, soft, gentle, potential people, and we get squeezed into these molds, which is more robotic in nature, and we start operating according to whatever those programs are. So as we pull ourselves out of that programming, we begin this to become this more nebulous, pliable self that is receptive to these powerful potentials that are flowing through us, and we can become more by engaging with our potential, more of a creator being within our life, so that we can begin to create whatever it is that we create according to our talents. It could be music, it could be art, it could be writing, it could be broadcasting, it could be mechanical, it could be creating engineering, it could be charting the stars, whatever it is, doesn't matter. But we have talents and we can put our efforts into that. And as we begin to put our efforts into our talents, the way the universe functions, because there is this energetic exchange, since we're not exchanging our energies with toxic behaviors and toxic situations, we begin to have our energy reflect back and forth through the more natural forces that are in nature, that are in the cosmos, that are in human beings in at the level of soul understanding. So it just takes you to another level of expression as we pull away from all that toxic engagement. And this happens on the level of individual. It can happen on the level of communities. It can happen on the level of families, on the level of cities, on the level of countries. It's just a matter of people choosing, because it is a choice. Especially as an adult, we can make those choices. Children, not so much. But rebellious children do make those choices, and they end up being outsiders. So a lot of us who would be listening to this radio station are those outsiders. Nevertheless, you know, so when I'm talking about personal responsibility, I'm talking about personal empowerment and personal self-empowerment and getting to the point that we can be fully operational throughout our life stream, whatever chaos may be going on around us, whatever sorrows and struggles we suffer, we begin to be fully operational based on an internal level. And from my vantage point, that's really what it means to be like a fully sovereign self, contained, self-determining human being. And it's always a work in process. It's not like you get there. It's a way of being, and it's a way of engaging in the world in such a way that you keep bringing yourself back to your compass, to the center compass of who you are, so that as you move through the world, you can process what's happening, learn from that processing what is helpful, letting go of what is not, embracing people into your life that are nourishing and loving and actually are, in which there are any manner of partnerships you can create, and distancing yourself from those energies that are just going to constantly cause you problems. So it's just my thoughts today. I'm going to share another piece of music with you. Serenity is a priority, I think, for all of us to be able to remain in balance, is to find that point within which we can really find our deeper sense of peace. John Monroe of Dr. Banker fame. Hello, John.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Can you speak up?
Yeah, I'm here in Boulder trying to stay centered with all the craziness going on. But I see you have a lot of smoke there in New York and the fires in Canada. Is that still there?
No, I don't see any real trace of it. We had one really bad day and a couple of iffy days, but it didn't seem to have lasted, at least visibly so. It's no way of knowing if particles are in the air or are in the water or on the ground. It's hard to say.
Yeah, we had some of it here. You know, it was some days it'd be worse than others, but it didn't change the color of the sky or anything. And I called you and left you a message that, you know, maybe you should tell people they should wear their mask when they go out. If it's too smoky, it'll keep those smoke, you know, the particles from being inhaled.
Yeah, I think a lot of people did that. I certainly did that, you know,
right,
when I was outside, because it was, it smelled like a fire. It really did smell like a fire.
Yeah,
and there was a little bit, some people said that they could smell the maple. Apparently there were maple trees that were burning, so they could smell that. So it was, the particles were there, so hopefully people were wearing their masks. I certainly saw a lot of people. And that is a true appropriate time to use a mask when you know that there are these big particles that you can keep out.
Well, smoke particles are a lot bigger than a virus particle, so the mask will keep them out. But yeah, I was just wondering about that because, that was a big fire. It burned up a lot of land. And I don't know, these things just keep happening. It just seems like one thing after another, you know? There's the virus and the war in Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, there's a lot of chaos going on. Yeah. And I think, however, we have to think about, so let's say the fires. A lot of the problem that we're facing, you know, I know that we do have these climate change issues, but a lot of it is because of the forests are not being maintained.
Right.
It's perfectly natural for there to be fires when you have a great swath of forest across a continent. There'll be fires, and it's part of the natural process. The burnt trees go into the earth, and new growth comes up. Right. But because we have these limited scapes now of the forest and the growth, that they need to be perpetually cleaned of old growth so that it doesn't just naturally burn, because we don't have great swaths of forest to replace it. And when all of the money that's needed to manage the land or to manage cities or to help manage opportunities for human beings, when all those resources are drawn away, the civilization is reduced to a more chaotic state. And it appears to me that there are forces in the world who, what shall we say, who find it useful, because in these chaotic states they're able to benefit in some way or profit in some way, gain control of certain areas, extract resources. So chaos is very convenient for those who are using it as a tool of to better their own situation, to enhance their own situation at the expense of the working people, the poor people, expense of the land, expense of resources. So I think that part of the frustration we feel about the fever pitch of the chaos is to begin to really understand what's leading into it so that we don't play into it. So if we're looking at the chaos in Europe, a lot of that is artificially nurtured. It was created. It's not a natural conflict. So rather than jumping into it, taking sides, making judgments, maybe we need to take a step back and see what's really going on and understand that it's not to wave a flag one way or the other, but to really look at the forces that have played into this conflict and maybe begin to deal with that. And it's the same thing with the environment. I'm finding that as much as I care about the environment, a lot of what's happening environmentally is not about saving the environment. It's about profiting from this mindset of the environment. So rather than looking for fuel sources or systems that will actually improve, it's all about, well, we're going to dump nuclear, and we're going to go with solar, or we're going to go with this other form of
wind,
whatever it is. But they don't tell you that in order to do that, we still have to exploit the earth for all of its mineral wealth.
Right. It takes material to make that stuff.
So all that stuff that's supposed to be saving the environment is actually destroying the environment.
Right.
And because its value is very high right now, it means that the countries that hold that material, there's an effort to destroy those countries so that the material can be extracted or stolen. And that leads to more kinds of conflict. So I think that as we look at the issues that we face, I care about the environment, but we need to look at what's really causing some of the problems and what's really needs to happen in order to repair these problems. So
it's probably the companies that make these wind generators and solar panels, you know, they want this out there, and somebody's trying to, you know, they start these problems and say, oh, you need solar and wind, but solar doesn't work good if it's too hot or too cold out. And wind generators, they cost a lot of money and they need a lot of maintenance.
Yeah, well, and that's part of it. And so, you know, and there's also the water hydropower. There are a lot of different power systems. But we're not looking to see which system works best in what place and how can we build a system that allows where there's wind to use wind, where there's water to use water, where there's gas to use gas, so that nothing gets over exploited and there isn't so much waste, because disposing of these windmills, those thingies, is toxic. So there's a lot of complex issues, and I think that people have to, well, I choose to, and I would hope people would retreat from the sloganeering about it, because it doesn't solve anything. It's just a slogan.
If you look up into the sky and look at the sun, it sits there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, putting out energy. It puts out electrons and radioactive particles. And Nikola Tesla and other people made radiant energy devices, and they would capture those particles and turn them into electricity, and it worked way better than solar panels.
And he was shut down because that's free energy, very low cost to build the devices, probably.
Right. Well, and I mean, it's always money.
That's why they say
the world for money, and the people doing this should be held accountable for this.
Well, yeah, but that's and therein lies the power struggles that we're engaged with. But to me, the solution is not to. Even though we often get driven into despairing over these things, we need to pull out of it, like I was speaking earlier about pulling back into the resources within to have a deeper understanding. And with a lot of these political situations, we have to retreat into understanding the full history, understanding all the complexities, and stop making snap judgments or sloganeering or projecting blame. And, you know, let's really begin to understand how we can resolve and solve some of these problems, which are legion. You know, I'm not kidding myself here, but if we could understand what's at play, it becomes more difficult to be manipulated by the slogans and the propaganda that we're being fed from morning till noon till night and through the overnight. All day long we are propagandized.
There's a website that people can look at. It's thehouseofmorey.org, and Morey is spelled M-O-R-A-Y, and that Dr. Henry Morey, he developed a radiant energy device, and you can see it on the website. There's pictures of it and him operating it, and it's running on iron and light bulbs and a fan and a heater, and he's using radiant energy from the sun. He had an antenna outside, and he's tuning into these particles from the sun and turning them into 50,000 watts of power with this device, and it's just sitting on a table.
I know, it's, and I think that this is technology that humanity has had for hundreds of thousands of years.
You were doing this in the 20s.
Yeah, not just in the 20s, but even if you look at, you know, I'm pretty big into
civilizations.
Yeah, I'm pretty big into past civilizations, and even history, modern history before we don't know about. Like right now, we're hearing a lot of talk about the Great Reset, you know, resetting civilization, which is done as a power move by the power players in our civilization.
I don't think it's going to work.
Well, it may or may not work, but I don't believe this is the first time that it happened, is what I'm saying. That it has happened multiple times throughout our long human history on Earth, where there was some kind of reset. Some people might say, well, maybe it was the Ice Age, or maybe it was the, you know, when all the ice melted, or maybe it was at the onset of a certain kind of conflict. Maybe it was at the birth of, you know, these Christ-like figures. I don't know necessarily all the times that things were reset, but I do believe human civilization has gone through these resets.
Maybe where, it's when they came out with the automobile.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. So all I'm saying is that it's a complex world that we're living in, and we have complex problems, but we need not necessarily be drawn into the frustration, because that is the biggest obstacle to changing it. So a large part of what we're being fed and pushed into is into this pointing the finger, blaming each other. No, it's this group of people. No, it's that group of people. No, it's the Russians. No, it's the Muslims. No, it's the gays. No, it's the blacks. No, it's the Africans.
It'd be the corporations and the banks.
Yeah, and generally. So I just think we have to get a bigger grasp of the reality in which we live, which includes this kind of fabricated reality that's made out of money and manipulation of power. And there's a true reality that has to do with our humanity. And we've been losing track of our humanity within the context of a corporate power that's telling us that everything is a simulated reality. Well, yes, everything in the corporate world, in our current physicality of expression, it's a lot of that is simulated, yes. But we come to it with a real, at least with it from my vantage point, with a human perspective, which is physical, but it's also ancestral with DNA and deep roots, and it's with the soul, the spirit, a deeper connection to the natural facet of a reality. So there are two things going on here. But we need to base our consciousness in the truth of our beingness in order to deal with the construct of the economic financial world, because otherwise we get consumed by it. And we might as well be robots, though we're not.
Did you see how everybody quit buying Bud Light beer? I mean, beer is just, you know, just some simple thing, but that company lost $14 billion, and Target, what they were doing, putting stuff out in their store.
There's two ways to look at it, though.
Yeah, but it's good. You can shop. You know, you can vote with your money. Be careful where you spend your money.
And yes, you can, and I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't. But there's a way in which I regard this as a stupid argument, personally. Who cares about Dylan Mulvaney dressing, becoming a woman, and selling beer? I mean, that is so far.
Who thinks these things up?
I mean, that is so far from anything that matters in my life. Why would I even respond to it?
Yeah, I don't drink beer, but I'm just saying, you know, that's what I mean. If people watch where they spend their money.
Well, I think that's one level. What I'm getting at is that there's a deeper level of understanding what money is, in the sense that not only what am I spending my money on, what am I investing my money in,
right.
How am I acquiring my resources, what am I doing with, am I just engaging with these silly games that people have put in front of my face in order to turn each other against us against each other.
Right.
You know, and so I see a lot of the conflict that's happening with the transgender community to be not so different than the conflict that I saw happening between the race communities, between black and white people, coming up with these notions of, well, these people are lazy, well, these people are evil, well, these people are this, these people. So it's still just, it's like a slight shift on an old game with a new set of perpetrators and victims. But we need to pull out of that dynamic and get back to understanding how we can fully be human beings, that I wouldn't waste my time, even if I drank the beer, I wouldn't waste my time boycotting the beer, because
right.
I don't care. It's not germane to my life what other people do with their lives. If somebody wants to live their life a certain way, more power to them. It's not a problem for me. And why should I make it my problem? And where we get into trouble is when you see people on all these different factional fights making it somebody else's problem. It's right. Like, I feel this way, so then you have to match how I feel. And right. that's when we start getting into these crazy conflicts as well. So that's part
like
of
these
it,
wars, you know, they try to make it like you got to get involved in this and get, you know, be important and pay attention to this. And, you know, I didn't start the war in Russia and Ukraine. I'm against war. I think it's stupid.
Well, yeah, I think it is too. But if you have a government representing you pouring weapons into a conflict, you should probably know some of the historical
context. Need to get a new new people.
Or you, yeah. Well, those become the questions. And I am actually running out of time. It's
right.
been so nice talking to you, John. Thank you for calling in.
All right. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye now. That was an interesting conversation. I'm going to share a little music with you. And as we transition to the next program, so please do stay tuned for a few more minutes. Well, not actually just a few more minutes. There's stuff going on all day and all night that we can pay attention to. And this is Old Souls by Diane Reeves.
I see them smile through faces of people I don't know. I hear them in the music on my radio. Wisdom of the winds, faces in the clouds, rhythm of the rains, oh mountain standing proud. Prepare me for a special place. Tell me I've no time to waste. Challenge me to face my life's request. Encourage me to do my best. Everywhere I go and everything I see, flying in the air, speaking truth through me. I am a curious spirit child who fell to earth through a crack of lightning. But God, so kind and merciful, sent old souls to guide me on. Yeah. Earth, it was a sacred place, a perfect
pretty baby, you are the soul. Snaps my control. Such a funny thing, but every time you're near me, I never can behave. You give me a smile and then I'm wrapped up in your magic. There's music all around me, crazy music, music that keeps calling me so very close to you, turns me your slave. Come to me, any little thing you want to, anything, baby, just let me get next to you. So am I insane, or do I really see heaven in your eyes? Bright as stars that shine up above you in the clear blue skies. How about you? Just can't live my life without you, baby. Come here, don't have no fear. Oh, is there a wonder why I'm really feeling in the mood for love? That would make me strong.